think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine. Good evening, Happy New Year, and welcome everyone to episode 268 of Low Limit Football on the 6th of January, 2020. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we are back after a long and relaxing holiday. The race in Italy tightens up as Lazio are on an incredible run that hasn't seen them drop points in the league since October 19th. PSG now sits 7 points clear of Marseille with a game in hand, but European spots are still on the line as 6 points separate third from 11th place in France. Germany are off until the 17th, but it sees RB Leipzig 2 points clear of Mönchengladbach, 4 clear of Bayern, and 7 clear of Borussia Dortmund, but it's Dortmund making all the moves. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit. Spain sees Barcelona and Real Madrid separated at the top of the table by just 2 goals, with Atleti and Sevilla 5 points back of the co-leaders. England sees 2 new coaches brought in as Carlo Ancelotti comes in to take over at Everton, and Mikel Arteta returns to Arsenal, this time as the manager, and the transfer window is open. We're going to discuss the silly season and much, much more with our special guest, Mr. Zeke Tell from Gianluca DiMarzio, who's going to join us in just a few minutes. But right now, let me get my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas. Happy New Year, and how was your trip, my friend?
Happy New Year, Joe. Glad to be back, and it was an amazing trip. For those that don't know, I went to Paraguay, as I tend to do every year. And, you know, it's what more can I say? It was a good time, be with family, enjoy the weather while people were complaining about the cold here back in the States. Got to see a bit of football as well, surprisingly enough. But, yeah, I had a great time. And also, I mean, I was able to find the perfect present for you, kind of a late Christmas present. But an early birthday present, especially on this special year for you, Joe.
Exactly. I'm excited. I'll have it in a couple of days. And when I get it, I'll post the picture on Twitter of me wearing it. And I can't wait. I'm really, really excited to see it. And we'll let the listeners tune into my Twitter page when that happens and you can see what I got. So, yeah. And it is a leap year, you know, as obviously you've just mentioned. So happy birthday to me and Taylor Twellman, of course.
You'll turn what, 12, right?
I turn 12. I will be 12 on February 29th. And I think the world owes me a ginormous thank you, because my birthday takes every single holiday after February 29th and moves it to the weekend. So it's party time on Christmas. It's party time on New Year's. It's party time on 4th of July here in the United States. I think they said Cinco de Mayo, which is, you know, an American holiday, lands on Taco Tuesday because of it. So... you're welcome, world. I feel like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who we're going to talk about in just a couple of minutes.
I hope they don't destroy your statue, though, if you ever get one.
No, God knows that. God knows that for sure. So hopefully I'm a little more respected than him right now, especially in Malmo. Especially after what they've done to his statue there in Malmo was kind of crazy. But they're pretty angry about him there. But they're not angry about him in other places of the world. We're going to talk about that in just a couple minutes. So, let's jump into trivia, can we?
Let's do it.
So the trivia question tonight is my responsibility. It comes to you from a journalist, Parmeshar Srivasta, and I'm butchering his name, but he's an Italian journalist, so it's an Italian question. But it is based off of today's performance from Cristiano Ronaldo. Okay. I don't know if you saw today, earlier today, Juventus with a 4-0 victory against Cagliari in the Serie A. They got back to work here for the 2020 season. Cristiano Ronaldo has a hat-trick. He also assisted on Gonzalo Higuain's goal, so he had himself a great start to the 2020 season. But Cristiano Ronaldo, and here's the question, Cristiano Ronaldo is the second player to score a hat-trick. A Serie A hat-trick, a La Liga hat-trick, and a Premier League hat-trick in this century, so since 2000, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you name the other player? Because he's the second.
Oof.
So, yeah, obviously, a player that is, you know, has scored goals.
Yeah.
Has played in all three leagues. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're looking for. So we'll come back to that at the end of the show. Let's jump into opening thoughts. How's that sound?
Yes.
All right. So let's do it. So the opening thoughts. Obviously, like we had said, the Chile season has started, and there was much speculation made about where Zlatan Ibrahimovic would go. Would he go back to Malmo, which we learned that he didn't? Would he stay in MLS? Would he go to Italy? Would he go to Genoa? Would he go to Napoli? Would he call it quits? That was another option as well. But obviously, as we were away on break, he did land somewhere. And that is he returned to AC Milan. The striker joins AC Milan on a 6-month contract to finish the end of the season with another option for an additional year. He comes over for floundering AC Milan, who seemingly can't score goals. They've already replaced their head coach once so far this season. They currently sit, if I remember correctly, 11th in the Serie A table. And really, you wonder, and I want to talk to Zeke about this in a few minutes, if this is an aim to just score goals, is it to score headlines and put butts in seats to get a little more money, or do they really feel that the 38-year-old can score goals for them? Because, you know, right now, and I'm going to look at their current performance or their current output of the Serie A season so far. Again, today they actually drew 0-0, and Zlatan actually came into the match for Christoph Piontek, who was the big signing last year. But so far on this season, 18 matches, they've only scored 16 goals. So they need a massive amount of help at Milan. And you know, we'll talk to Zeke about it in a few minutes as to what Milan can do. But what are your thoughts of Zlatan making this move to the Serie A, and specifically to the San Siro?
Well, I think it's kind of, in a way, kind of a homecoming for him. I think we've always realized, and I think we spoke to various guests, obviously a special mention to Niamh Tarale, who unfortunately wanted to see him go to the other side of the locker room at the San Siro, but unfortunately went for this side in Milan.
The red side.
But that's correct, the red side. But at the same time, you feel as if, though, he's made that choice, and rightly so, in a place where he's happy. You know, he said that, you know, Milan was always the place where he always felt great, where he was able to play his best football the way he has always enjoyed himself there. And it makes sense. It makes sense for a player like him to come to a team where, obviously, he has a special spot, but also you look at it as a challenge. You know, a team, as you said, Joe, is it scoring? They're not doing well in the current league standings in Serie A. So obviously that just brings a lot of responsibility to him coming back. Would it change his perception at the club, though? That's the thing. What's going to happen? Obviously, we can't judge a player in his first 25 minutes in Serie A in the last, 8 years? Mm-hmm. Or something like that. Yeah, so too early to tell. I think it's going to be interesting to see how Milan will manage him forward, how Stefano Pioli will try to use him, what's going to happen to players like Piatek as well. You know, the player, as you said, had so much promise, came on a big signing last season, you know, had a great season last year with Genoa, and even the second half with Milan, and you're not seeing that as well this season. So what's going to happen? I'm curious. But at the same time, it's something where you prove that if he's still in the shape to do it, if he's still physically able to demonstrate himself on the world stage, then who are we to judge what he's been able to do in the past few months, a few years? outside of Italy, you know, doing it in Paris, doing it in Manchester, doing it in LA. Who's to say you can't do it in Milan? Because if he can do it, then who are we to criticize him, is what I can say.
Oh, sure. You know, you look back on his record. I was just reading from The Guardian that he had scored 56 goals in 85 games between 2010 and 2012, the last time he was in Milan. But he had an incredible 2 years for the LA Galaxy. He scored 52 goals in 56 games. I mean, and you've got to remember, this is a player coming off an ACL injury, and coming off an ACL injury at age 35, if I remember correctly, when he had it, is a massive achievement. I don't care what league you go in. I know everyone will want to look at MLS and say, oh, you know, it's not as good or whatever, and I get that. But at the same time, to play professional football at 35 years old, coming off what many could have had, many other people would have taken as a career-ending injury, and to score that many goals and be that prolific and be one of, you know, arguably for the time frame, I mean, he's a flash in the pan, but in the time frame, one of the best footballers MLS has ever seen. You know, we talk about hyperbole and stuff like that, but I mean, I think he's somebody that, you know, to an extent fits that mold. He goes to a team that is absolutely floundering, but he's going to a league, Rob, where even some of the lesser teams, Hellas Verona, is only giving up 20 goals in 17 games. They're barely giving up a goal a game. Some teams are better than that. Inter's only given up 15 and 18 matches. Juve, 17 and 18 matches. You know, Lazio's even one goal a game. So there's good defensive play in the Serie A, certainly much, much stronger than what he found in MLS. So it's interesting to see how that translates over. Now, obviously, limited time today in his first action since finishing the MLS season with the LA Galaxy. He only picked up a few minutes, didn't score a goal, so we can't read much into what we saw on the pitch today for the few minutes that he got. But I think the task now is on Pioli to really make Zlatan work with Piątek, because we've seen what Piątek can do. And I think if he can find a way and find the distributor that can give them the ball and feed those two players, I think you can start to see Milan turn this around. And I don't want to bleed too much into the Milan talk on this, because I do want to talk to Zeke about that. In fact, that's probably going to be my first question to him when we get him on the air in a minute. But I think for Zlatan, I think this is a move that I think is more of a something for Zlatan himself to say, yes, I can still do it at the highest level. I think maybe he felt not quite as challenged at LA or in MLS as he would in, let's say, PSG, or he would at, let's say, Bayern Munich or obviously AC Milan, which is a massive, massive club. So I think for him, it's a personal challenge. And Zlatan Ibrahimovic is not someone that would ever back down from a personal personal challenge. He's had his healing time. He's regained his form. He's scored some magnificent goals in MLS. And I think Zlatan, the player, Zlatan, the person, is ready to go back for that one last time to say, you know what, can I still do it? And I think the 6 months and the contract, I think, really lends itself to thinking that way as well, because it's 6 months, right? Either he's going to come in and he's going to score 10, 12 goals in the last 6 months of Milan's season. And then depending on what happens there, maybe he ends up back in Europe. Maybe Milan goes on this crazy run. Or he doesn't do it and they don't take the second year option and he retires and he sails off into the sunset. But either way, the contract sets up that way. If we can do it for 6 months, we're going to do it for 18. If we can't do it for 6 months, then we're done. And we'll just go back to Sweden and call it a day. So, I think the contract makes sense. I think it makes sense for Milan. I think it makes sense for Zlatan. And I think if you get what you got out of Zlatan to MLS, if you get that translated over to AC Milan, I think we're going to really see a star again. I think he's going to be back on that stage where he relishes it and he shines in it and he performs in it. And I think you're going to get that kind of Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And despite the better defenses that he's going to face here in the Serie A. So, it's going to be great to see what happens, and obviously kicking off the second half of the season, we're certainly ready to go with it as well. So let's table the Zlatan talk here, and let's bring in Zeke Tell. Zeke hasn't been with us in a while, so I'm really, really glad to have him back and kick off the new decade with him. And Zeke comes to us from Gianluca DiMarzio. So let's get him on the line, Rob, and chat with Zeke. Joining us now on Low Limit Football from Gianluca DiMarzio, Zeke Tell. Zeke, welcome back to the show. How are you tonight? Happy New Year.
Hey, guys. Happy New Year to you as well. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, glad to have you. So I want to jump in. We were just talking about Zlatan Ibrahimovic and what he means to AC Milan. But obviously, Milan hasn't been scoring goals, so he will help there for sure. But what else does Milan need? Because it seemed like they're in such a mess on both ends of the ball. Really, if without Zlatan right now, and even with Zlatan, you'd have to say their best player is Gigi Donnarumma, and he's probably their most valuable piece. But after him, there's really not a lot to talk about. So what are you hearing that AC Milan is looking to do in this transfer window that might help them possibly jump back into the European spots?
Yeah, guys, it's I think I read today that the record under Pioli is not really an improvement since he joined on. So I think Milan still is in a building phase, and I think they're going to look at moving on from some players who've been with the team. You know, I think you have to look at Suso. He was booed by the fans in a draw, another scoreless draw today for Milan. And so I think moving on from him is something that a lot of Milan fans will say, you know, it's time for. And then as far as adding players, they've added Ibrahimovic. He was a target to sort of bring a little bit of credibility, a little bit of veteran leadership into the team. Obviously, he scored in the MLS, and, you know, strikers of his age have performed in Serie A as well. So, you know, I think there's hope that he can provide some goals, which would be a help for a team that's really not scoring a lot lately. And their other targets are going to be defense. So their main target right now is a Barcelona player, Todibo. They've met with Barcelona, their sporting director, last week in Spain. And they're working on a loan option with an option to buy, with Barcelona holding a buyback clause. So he's their top target. I think that they're waiting to negotiate the terms of the transfer for him. But they're targeting a center back in January. And I think that's going to be sort of on the additions front where Milan is going to go next.
You know, I'll jump in as well, Zeke, and talk about Pioli as well. You know, do you see him being part of this kind of project? As you know, we have to remember that he was signed on, I believe, a 2-year contract. But do you see Pioli as part of this project that you had mentioned?
I think you'd really have to see how he gets on with some of the core players that they're bringing in. You know, Leao's sort of become a fixture in the team. He's a young player that they can build around. Benacer, Teo Hernandez. I got the wrong one. Teo Hernandez has been a bright spot for them, playing left back. So I think it's a question of sort of whether the management thinks that he can grow with this core. They've had so much turnover in the manager role that I think that bringing some stability is something that would be welcome for the club. But in this climate, you know, it's hard to stick with a manager who's not getting results, a team with ambitions to go to Europe, a team that's you know, whole business plan is predicated on bringing them back into starting with the Europa League once they manage to get some results. But ultimately, it's going to be, they have high ambitions for a club. Club like Milan, so it's always tricky because there's a lot of impulses to make a change, as they've done so frequently. But I think it depends on how the project unfolds.
Definitely. Now, going to the other side of the locker room at the San Siro, we have to talk about Inter. The rumors coming out of there, and we saw it on Di Marzio as well. The big one, of course, is the situation for Arturo Vidal to leave Barcelona to head to Inter Milan. What is the latest coming out of that rumor so far, Zeke?
So Di Marzio reported earlier today that if Vidal was to leave Barcelona, far from certain at this point, but Inter is the sole destination that would be in his future. So I think that's could be perceived as a positive towards Inter landing him, and I'm sure that, you know, he's someone who they're working really hard to get. Right now, Barcelona is getting ready to play in the Spanish Super Cup. So I think there's going to be a few days where talks take a backseat to that. But once they resume, I think Inter is going to look to make the move for Vidal.
No, definitely. I think that would be an interesting move, and to also provide that depth that Inter needs if they are going to challenge for the Serie A title, but also, you know, to see what they can do in the Europa League. So I think it's super important as well.
I think with every match that goes on, Inter, you know, continue to impress. Beating Napoli was a big result, and they have to be considered serious favorite or serious contenders for the Scudetto this year.
For sure. And of course, another player that had been rumored to that club as well was the likes of Spurs, Christian Eriksen. Apparently, some new rumors have said that the director, Pepe Marotta, denied making a bid for him, with teams like Manchester United as well providing much more of an advantage to get the player. What have you been hearing about that so far?
Yeah, in my opinion, it seems like a move that's more likely to take place in the summer if Vidal leaves. He'll be a free agent, so he's free to move on a Bosman transfer after the end of this season. But Inter have been rumored to be making a push to try to sign him in June. Tottenham is open to selling the player, obviously preferring to gain something on his sale rather than letting him go as a free agent. And from Inter's perspective, having a leg up on potentially other teams who could come in and offer him big wages in the summer to make a deal and secure him now would be something that they could do. You know, if he's a fallback for not landing Vidal, if that influences how hard they push for him in January, I think that's something that would probably be likely to develop. But otherwise it's still open for the summer if they don't land in January.
Now, Zeke, with the push here for the Serie A title, you know, I don't know how Inter's going to prioritize the Europa League, but obviously the Serie A title is a big deal because of Juventus's dominance over the past 8 years. Could you see where this race remains this tight, where these two teams are tied on points? Maybe Lazio continue on their massive run that they've had so far, and Inter jump the gun and maybe throw a lot of money for both of these players at their respective clubs?
I don't see it. I think landing a player of that caliber would be something of a coup for Inter, even though, despite their ability to compete both for domestically and in Europe, I just think that the chances of them signing both would be a little outside of what I could perceive happening. Gotcha. Just in terms of envisioning, you know, how we see these transfers play out and those big names, you know, you often hear more smoke than fire in a lot of cases.
Sure. Now let's look at a transfer that actually has happened in this window. And it's at the moment, according to the Guardian tracker, it is the biggest transfer that's happened in all of Europe. And that's the £30 million that Juventus spent, sent to Atalanta for Dejan Kulusevski, the 19-year-old midfielder who's currently playing at Parma on loan there. Massive move, young player, very, very exciting. He's had I think he scored 4 goals so far in the season, if I remember correctly. A couple of things here. I know that right now this move is almost like the Christian Pulisic move, where they've made the move in the December or in the January transfer window, but he's not going to come until the summer. But I think that might still be contingent on Juve possibly moving Emre Can, Adrian Rabiot, or maybe, you know, even maybe somebody else. Do you see that move being accelerated, where they do bring him in the January window, especially given all the competitions Juve are in and with the hard-charging Inter? Or do you see this totally staying put and then bringing him in the summer?
No, I think it's still very open. You know, I think one thing to consider here as well is how eager Kulusevski himself is to join Juventus. I think that he could definitely push for Atalanta's parent club to release him sooner. As you say, the deal has been agreed to. The terms have been finalized. He had his medical exams with Juve and passed them today. So the player is a Juventus player. And I still think that we could see him move in January. And you cited the hot Serie A race. And I think Juventus certainly want to do everything they can to improve their team having already invested in the player and bring him in and see whether he's able to contribute on a high level. He's certainly a really exciting player. He's, you know, burst onto the scene and opened a lot of eyes so far, and Juventus have invested in him. And I could definitely see that being a possibility. I don't know when it'll be determined, but yeah, certainly through January, it'll develop.
No doubt about it. Let's focus on another move. We saw Patrick Cutrone in the summer move over to Wolves. Really hasn't gotten any playing time. He's kind of been rotting on the bench there a little bit. For a Wolves side, by the way, that's playing very, very well in the EPL. Now the talk is that he may actually move back to Italy in a move, whether it be a loan deal or a purchase or a sale. But back to Fiorentina, a team that right now is sitting 4 points out of the relegation zone. They're barely averaging a little bit more than a goal a game. They were starting to turn it around, but then the Frank Ribery injury has really caused problems for them. Do you see Fiorentina getting this move done and bringing Cutrone back? And can Cutrone help to contribute the goals that they're just not getting from everywhere else?
Yeah, it's definitely a playing time issue. His move to England has not been successful for him. Fiorentina need the help. You know, they're struggling right now, especially with Comiso taking over, the investments in the team. Certainly didn't expect this. As far as if he can help, he was far from a consistent player when he was in Serie A. I think that's, you know, something to consider, that he's not quite a proven commodity, but he has played in the league before. Maybe we can see a situation where he's learned and is ready to take the next step to being a consistent player. I think Fiorentina kind of are in a place, like you mentioned, with the Ribery injury. They have to shake up the team. And they really have to start, getting a foothold in the standings to keep out of the relegation race.
Okay. Another player that has really jumped onto the scene, especially in recent weeks, is Juve defender Mary Demiral, somebody that they brought in the summer window. They've kept him here. Obviously, the injury to Giorgio Chiellini has kind of thrown a monkey wrench in Juve's plans. But obviously, with Matthias De Ligt coming in, they brought Demiral in. They've also got Gomez, who they loaned back to Genoa on the season. They do have a berth of center backs. And there's a lot of interest going on right now. Leicester City, Arsenal, Borussia Dortmund. There are quite a few teams looking to throw a lot of money at this young defender who's really proven himself so far in the past couple months at Juventus. Do you see Juve selling this commodity that they brought in so recently? Or do you think this is just kind of, you know, people are going to make offers at him, but Juve's not going to let him go at all?
I think for a player like Demiral, a player who's obviously young and yet to prove himself, I think given big offers, I think there's a big temptation to try to move him and take that profit and being able to reinvest him into proven star players, something that we've seen Juventus in the last couple of years be increasingly willing to do, as far as making it and trying to win a Champions League. I think it's a real possibility. On Di Marzio, we reported recently that Leicester has made an offer for him. With that kind of demand and those kind of prices, I think Juventus could be in a position to sell. I think they can count on Chiellini contributing this season, coming back from his injury, and then like you said, they have they've invested in other players in that position to sort of bide them through. So yeah, we could see that happen. I really think so.
You know, and the way the show started tonight, we've talked about, guys over the line, over the 30-year-old line, coming back from ACL reconstruction and seemingly superhuman. And Giorgio Chiellini is certainly a guy that could prove to be like that, just like Zlatan Ibrahimovic. They kind of have the same fire in them. So I wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't want to count him out. That's for sure. I think what he's proven to do for that club is,
superhuman.
Certainly not. Don't want to go out on that note.
No, of course. Before I let you go, I want to just throw one last question at you. And, you know, I know we've talked about a bunch of different transfers. We've talked a bunch of different rumors tonight. Is there anything out there that you have heard of, you know, recently that we didn't cover tonight? You know, maybe something, even breaking news if you had something like that. Is there anything else going on out there? Because usually January is the quiet window, but because since they've lifted the Champions League restriction, I think we've always seen a little more action in this window than normally anticipated.
Yeah, you know, guys, you're right. I think January has become a little bit more active than we've seen in past years. So the rumors, nothing on my radar. Okay. So sorry to let you down, but I'm going to give a little teaser for tomorrow night when the DiMarzio crew will be back with the transfer news, the nightly show. So on my Twitter page, you can find the news, and I'll be retweeting all of my hardworking colleagues on the site. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely stay tuned. I think hopefully, you know, from my perspective, it's fun when we have a lot going on in January. So I'll keep my eyes and ears open, and yeah, it'll be, I'm sure you guys can't wait to see what unfolds as well.
I was going
to
say, you can't say that without dropping your actual Twitter handle. So where can they find that news tomorrow?
So I'm at Zeke Tell on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And you can find all of my English translations of DiMarzio's reports. Obviously, he's the Sky Sports reporter based in Italy and covers the transfer market as well as anyone.
Great stuff. Again, Zeke, thanks for coming on the show. We really, really enjoyed it. Happy New Year to you. All the best of luck, and we look forward to reading your news and talking to you again soon.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
And that was Zeke Tell from Gianluca DiMarzio joining us on the show. Great information there. And I want to continue, Rob, with the transfer window discussion, because I think it's a great topic, especially this time of year, and leagues kind of getting back into the flow of things. So one of the moves that we talked about, you know, financially, the Kulishevsky move we talked about has been the biggest move so far, but probably the one that's raised the most eyebrows, Rob, is the Erling Haaland move from Salzburg to Dortmund, which I don't think everyone expected. I think a lot of people, even you and I have talked about it, we expected Haaland, especially in the Red Bull family, to go to RB Leipzig, work up front with Timo Werner, and then Timo Werner is going to move on to Bayern Munich by all accounts. So this one for him going to Dortmund kind of came out of the blue a little bit, but I think for me, it's a great move for the kid, because we've seen so many young players become so successful at Dortmund. You know, we talk about Christian Pulisic, Jadon Sancho, Ousmane Dembele, Mario Götze at one point, remember, before he went back over to Bayern Munich and then went back to Dortmund, was another youth product there. We've seen them do so, so well. And I think this is a great move for him. I want your opinion on this, because RB Leipzig has also had, you know, Naby Keita, obviously Timo Werner over there as a youngster. We've had them be successful developing great young talent. So what are your thoughts on Haaland's move? A little bit of a surprise going to Dortmund instead of RB Leipzig.
Well, I think it's a good move for him. I think it caught us all by surprise that there were no rumors about this, because everyone was touted him to go to England as well. There have been rumors from clubs like Manchester United, from Liverpool. But the fact of the matter is that something like this had occurred for him is great. I think for a player like him, you know, he's still young. He's 20, I think.
Yeah. 19 or 20. He's not much older than that.
Yeah, so regardless of that, it's a good 19. He's 19.
19, yeah.
Even then, he's at a great club that is known for developing talent. You know, the likes of your Mario Götzes, your Jadon Sanchos, your Christian Pulisics, you know, all those young talents that have passed, Ousmane Dembele's, all those talents that have passed by the yellow wall. And to come now to this team gives him a lot of experience, but also, you could really look at a situation where he is going to get considerable playing minutes, you know, with the likes of players like Pau Gasol, you know, with his future still pending on what can happen, or Marco Reus, you know, you look at him trying to combine well with Sancho and other players alongside Thorgan Hazard. It's a good move. It's a really good move for him. And I think also that they were able to get him at what really seems to be a bargain nowadays for a striker of his caliber. 20 million euros when you're paying the likes of 100 for players like Joao Felix or something along those lines. And to get a player like Haaland, I think is a good move. And it demonstrates yet again another example of how ambitious Dortmund are in the long term, but also just how they envision themselves in the future. We kind of have already known that for what they've done in the last decade or so, and this is just another fine example. So I think it's a really good move for him, and I'm very excited to see what he does playing in the Bundesliga.
And I'm glad you mentioned the money part of it, because it was something I was going to bring up as well. When you go to Transfer Market, obviously Transfer Market has these players rated in terms of their overall value, and then you look at the transfer money, and here I have it broken down in dollars. This move cost Dortmund $22.8 million. But Haaland's valued at $51.3 million. And I think right now, if they wanted to turn around in the summer...
Sorry, 51, say that one more time, 51 million?
He's valued at $51.3 million, according to Transfer Market. So if you think about that, if Dortmund wanted to just turn around in the summer and sell him, just flat out turn around and sell him, you're looking at them netting like $30 million. Just... because it's a massive, massive, intelligent amount of business. They funded the fee as well because of they've selling Julian Weigl, 24-year-old defensive midfielder. They sold him to Benfica for the same amount of money, 22.8. So they've washed the money and they've brought in a 19-year-old starlet. I mean, the kid's doing nothing but scoring goals. So he's been a fantastic addition, to Dortmund. There are two more questions that I wanted to run by you, two players. I'm going to give them both to you at the same time, and I'm going to let you kind of rattle on about them, because I'm interested, and I know that you're going to be the expert on these. The first one, obviously, is Gabriel Barbosa. Everyone knows him as Gabigol. Has had massive success at Flamengo, went to the Club World Cup final, won the Copa Libertadores, won the Brazilian Cup, and now has become a hot commodity again, and there's talk of him possibly going to West Ham. There's possibilities of going to a couple other teams, staying at Flamengo because he still enters property. So what are your thoughts on where he may land? The other one is a move that happened as well. River Plate central midfielder Ezequiel Palacios, who just went to Bayer Leverkusen, and obviously Leverkusen in that German Bundesliga race, goes over to Leverkusen for just short of $20 million. What 21-year-old central midfielder, what do we think of him as well, going from the runners-up for the Copa Libertadores?
Yeah, I think for Gabigol, I think his situation is a bit more complex. Reason being is I don't see him with the future Inter Milan, I think, just because of the form that Lukaku and Lautaro Martinez are having. That just leaves Gabigol right out of the equation, and a player of his caliber should not be able to just be a bench player, and rather, if he is going to go to Europe, he has to go to a more useful club as able to demonstrate his talents. The other teams as well, I mean, the likes of Chelsea, I mean, personally, I still don't see that happening, just because, they have Tammy Abraham already, and he seems to be a talent. I don't think they want to get rid of Giroud just yet as well, considering what could happen with him. Mm-hmm. So it's a weird one. It really is a weird one. Personally, I think Gabigol does definitely stay at Flamengo. I think for some odd reason, they're going to find to make a profit. Because you have to remember, Joe, they are also looking to sell one of their other young talents. That's Renier, a young 18-year-old from Flamengo. One of them has been rumored to possibly have head to Real Madrid. So another teenager, another Brazilian teenager, 17, turns 18 next week. He's another player that, is able to make a profit. And if they're able to get that profit, then they could use that money that they get to try to keep Gabigol. I mean, it'd probably be enough already, but I generally see Gabigol starting at Flamengo heading into the new year. And who was the other player you mentioned? I'm sorry.
Ezequiel Palacios, the midfielder from River Plate. Moved over to Bayer Leverkusen for just short of $20 million. So I think that's a great move for them as well. I wanted your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's a really good move for him. I think he demonstrates that kind of talent that he has at River Plate. Personally, he really is a player that I really rate a lot. I think he's one of those strong defensive, even center midfielders that could function well. I think with Leverkusen, what they're trying to do is they're trying to get rid of a player like Charles Aranguiz, who is likely expected to leave the team in the next few months. So there's your replacement here. And I'm curious to see what happens with him and a player like Kai Havertz. Because, you know, even though Kai Havertz hasn't had the best season so far compared to last year, it's curious to see what can happen to him. Because if he moves on, then you look at all the attention given to Palacios for this team. But I think him with the likes of Leon Bailey, Lucas Alario, the Paulinho as well, the young Brazilian as well coming from Vasco, I think it's a good move for him. I think it really is a good move for a player like him to gain experience in a top league for a good team. And yeah, I'm really excited to see what he can do as well in the Bundesliga.
A couple last minute transfers that I just want to throw out there for you from my standpoint. No need to comment on them. Alan Pulido coming into Kansas City in MLS from Chivas as one of the top scorers in Liga MX. That was a almost an $11 million move. So that's a big move for Kansas City Wizards. Yimi Chada, who was at Atletico Mineiro, brother of Diego Chada, over at Portland Timbers. Well, he's going to go and bring his talents to Portland with his brother. So you're going to get the Chada brothers playing in MLS as well. Timbers signed him for $6 million. And the last one, Rob, that I want to throw at you, because he's one of my all-time favorite players playing right now, Christian Cueva, leaving Europe, leaving Krasnodar in the Premier League, and going to Santos in Brazil. So Cueva returning back to South America. So.
I think that's another good move for him to go into Brazil as well. I mean, we also have to mention another Peruvian as well, Renato Tapia, heading off to DC United.
Yes, that's
for
right.
All accounts.
They did. Yeah, I don't know if they finalized that one yet, but that is another big move. So we're seeing some younger talent. You know, I love the Pulido move, by the way. I think that is a huge, huge move. The Chara one is only, you know, I don't want to say it's gimmicky, but, you know, he's going to play with his brother. You know, it's one of those things. But the one that you just mentioned for DC United as well is another big move. And these are the kinds of moves I think as MLS fans we want to see. Younger talent, you know, attacking talent. I think it's great stuff to see for the league.
And also as well, now that I mention it, or at least we were talking about it, we could definitely also see two Paraguayans heading off to MLS.
That's
you know, the likes, and obviously now I mention it, it's the likes of Matias Villasanti and Santiago Arzamendi, of two players from the Paraguayan national team playing on Cerro Porteño. They're both expected to join MLS. The big question is who is expected to go to which team. It was initially reported, and I even said this as well on Twitter, if you've been following, that Villasanti was supposed to go to Atlanta United, whereas Arzamendi would go to another MLS club that is unnamed. But in the last few, I would say, 24 hours, those roles have been switched, where it appears that Santiago Arzamendi, the left back, will be heading to Atlanta United, and that the midfielder Villasanti is also going to MLS, but it's still not known which club he will go to. So going to be exciting to see what happens to both these players in the next few weeks and how they'll do if they do indeed land in MLS.
6 days old and the silly season's alive and well. So let's move on to our last topic of the night. I want to just brush over this really quick. VAR again, right? We've talked about VAR plenty of times, but it has really been problematic in the Premier League so far this year. It seems like of all the leagues that have dealt with VAR, they've dealt with it the worst. And the latest controversy is the lines that are being drawn to determine if a player has been offsides on a goal or not has really sent, you know, many fans into a fury here. We've seen it happen quite a few times. Many people say that Liverpool are benefiting from the VAR controversies, and I'm going to call it controversy because it does bring up a lot of discussion. But the margins that they're looking at VAR are just so minute. I want to ask you, Rob, on this topic: are they really trying to overanalyze it at this point? Are they trying too hard? To get the call that right?
Well, I think what we saw over the weekend as well is that they finally were able to use the screens. I think the first referee I forgot what game, I think it was a Crystal Palace game, I forgot off the top of my head, but you know, I think if you're going to use that extension, then and what other leagues are not doing, well, other leagues are doing in terms of looking at screens and analyzing it, then you know, it could do better. I think that's the issue there. I mean, yes, you could depend on what you hear from the colleagues in the other room, as you could say, the VAR room. But if you're not using the screen as well, I mean, I guess that just demonstrates a confidence that you have. But I generally don't know why it takes so long for something so simple.
Yeah,
is what I'm trying to say here. But I just think that they need to use the screens more, like what we see in Spain, what we see in Germany, what we see in Italy, what we see in other leagues as well. They need to use the screens. And in comparison to what we saw this weekend, or at least in the last few games, we haven't seen that. It only just happened this weekend in the game, the Crystal Palace game I'd mentioned. But I want to see that more happen. I want to see more of that happening, personally. And I think that consistency and to be able to look at those screens is to demonstrate and provide the confidence of what you're able to see. Because you're the referee. You're the one that has to make the final decision and whatnot. You're the one that has to be trusted with the decision of what could happen or what could be overturned.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think, to be honest with you, that if we did see the referees in England go to the video screens more often to make those calls themselves rather than rely on somebody in a booth in London, I think that this line controversy would not be as controversial. I think that because these referees are relying on somebody else, that they're not truly officiating the match at that point, that they're just relying elsewhere. I think when they don't make those decisions for themselves, I think it lends to the questioning. And now you go into this thing where we're trying to depict this by the pixel or by the line or by the millimeter or the centimeter. And apparently there's like a 12 centimeter margin of error here, which is think about it, is ridiculous. But, you know, when you start to add those factors into the fact that these referees don't seem to be taking the responsibility themselves to go over and look at what has happened, I think has just lent itself to become more problematic in England. I don't see these problems as pronounced in Spain or in Italy or in Germany or in France, as you just said, Rob, because I think you see the referees going and taking the time. And so what if we add an extra minute on at the end of the match? Big deal. They got the call right, but it's not controversial. Do you see what I mean? Where I think in England, the system has lent itself to be more controversial, which I think has caused the big issues in England. And I think once you see the referees start to take that initiative a little bit more, maybe even setting a rule from up above saying you have to go and look at this no matter what. You can't rely on the VAR referee. We've even seen it, Rob, in South America, right, where you've sent me plenty of videos where the referee, where the video analysis is actually screaming at the referee through the mic, go look at the screen, go look at the screen, and they go and look. You know, so I think when you do that and the referee takes responsibility on the pitch as the person, this is what he saw from the replay, then I think these problems will start to iron themselves out a little bit. I think VAR will always be controversial just because there will be those purists that say, oh, you know, it interferes with the game. I like the undecisiveness of the referee. But that same person is going to be complaining when their team loses the Premier League title because somebody was a foot offsides and they didn't go back and look at it. Or somebody was pulled down in the box, but the referee didn't see it, you know. And all of a sudden, they're not going to like that human error anymore. They're going to rather that the human went and looked at the screen. So interesting to see how that develops. And again, this is the first year for the EPL for VAR. I think as they go on, as they continue to use the system, they will get better at it. But I can't agree with you more that the referee needs to go in and stick his eyeballs into the screen and just say, hey, what happened here? And then make an authoritative decision as to what happened. And then we move on with the play. Couldn't agree more. So
all right.
Let's before we get back to the trivia, we've got some matches to look out for this week. Now, again, like we said, Germany is still off. And I believe this week Spain is off because of Copa del Rey play. So the Serie A is actually going to make up for it big time, Rob. Let's start on Friday. Ligue 1 sees Rennes and Marseille. That's another battle for the top of the table, you know, just a few points behind PSG. That match is on Friday at 2:45 p.m. On Saturday, and it really is crazy in Italy this weekend, Rob. These are some massive, massive matchups. Lazio is going to host Napoli. Napoli, obviously, you know, playing Inter pretty tough, especially in the first half today. Now they're going to travel to Lazio. A team, like I said, hasn't dropped points since November. That happens at 12 o'clock on Saturday. That's going to then be broken up by Tottenham Hotspur hosting Liverpool. Liverpool obviously running away with the EPL title as we speak. That's at 12:30 p.m. And then back into the Serie A, where Inter are going to face probably the most informed team in all of Italy, and that's Atalanta. at 2:45 p.m. Atalanta, I believe this weekend with a 4-0 win. They pasted AC Milan the match before 5-0. They're scoring goals. They're going to get Duvan Zapata back. So that team is Gasperini's got that team really, really playing well. If this team continues to play this way, Rob, going into the Champions League, they're going to be something to reckon with. And then on Sunday, Juventus, obviously seemingly turning it around today with a 4-0 over Cagliari, are going to the capital to face Roma at 2:45 p.m. on Sunday. Another massive matchup. You see Inter, you see Lazio, you see Juventus, all facing teams that are closely chasing them in the Serie A title. You could easily see these three teams lose and have all these other teams start to tighten that race back up. Massive, massive matches on the weekend. And then, like I said, La Liga will come back the following week after their Copa del Rey matches this weekend. And then the week after that, Germany will be back in and we'll be back into the full swing of things of everything Europe. So looking forward to all that. Let's jump back to the trivia question, Rob, real quick. And as I told you earlier, Cristiano Ronaldo today became the second player to score a Serie A hat-trick, a La Liga hat-trick, and a Premier League hat-trick in this century. Can you name the only other player to do it, and would you like a hint?
Well, let me take a guess first, because I feel like his name has been mentioned all throughout the show. Mm-hmm. And then I'll take that hint, if that's okay. Is it Zlatan Ibrahimovic?
It is not. The person that did this has not been mentioned tonight at all, believe it or not.
Okay.
I'll give you another hint.
I'll take that hint.
He is South American.
He is South American.
And again, I'm taking this information from journalist Parmeshwar Srivastava, who is
I'll take your word. Suarez never played in Italy. Neymar never played in England or Italy. God. This is a good one. It's a good one.
I think he started his career in Italy, if I remember right.
He started his career in Italy. Yeah. Where does he play now?
He's actually back in Italy. I'm sorry, he's back in Italy.
He's back in Italy? He's
back in Italy. Currently injured.
Oh, Alexis Sanchez.
Alexis Sanchez. The only other player to do it.
That's right. So Barcelona, Arsenal, and Udinese,
that's right. So, your answer, Cristiano Ronaldo became the second player to score a hat-trick this century in the Serie A, the EPL, and La Liga. The only other player to do it this century, Alexis Sanchez. So, I'm imagining Zlatan probably had one of his hat-tricks before the century. So,
probably.
There you go. Not bad for the night. So, now that we've gotten our feet wet, we are back in the swing of things. Should we hit the closing music, my friend?
Let's do it.
All right. And there we have it. So, for episode 268 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Zeke Tell from Gianluca DiMarzio for joining us. Next week, I don't want to say it's in stone yet, but we are hoping to have Tony Miola join us on the show. Looking forward to seeing him and speaking with him again. He was a little busy tonight, couldn't make it, but assures us that we should be here the next week. And we have a great lineup to start the entire 2020 season with you, and looking forward to speaking with everybody again. So, for episode 268 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.